you have this whole range from very low to very high. And this is not the entire possible range. It's certainly not the range of human hearing. You could, you know, the ear can hear quite a bit more. But how do you make sense of all of this? How do you organize it? Just like we talked about organizing beat and organizing meter, what do you do with pitch? Well, we can start with one very fundamental organization. And that's the octave. Now, what is the octave? Let's say we were to sing My Country 'Tis of Thee. You know, let's say we were all do it. My country 'tis of thee, sweet land of liberty, of thee I sing. Okay, I heard quite a few people singing. That's good. Now, were we all singing the same thing? Well, as, you know, assuming we were, that, you know, we were singing the right notes, were we all singing the same thing? And most of you were singing the right notes, I didn't hear. No, we weren't singing the same thing at all. I was not singing the same notes I was playing on the piano. I was playing this. Oops, sorry. I was singing this. All the women in the room were singing this. The men, those that were singing this. So what's going on? It sounded like the same thing. The difference was we were singing an octave apart. And this is that fundamental division. What it means is, as far as acoustics go, if you want an acoustic definition, it's when two pitches are, or one pitch is twice as the frequency of the other, that is measured in hertz and all of that sort of thing. So, you know, you hear of A440, that means that's vibrating 440 times a second. Well, this A down here is vibrating 220 times a second. Now, don't worry about acoustics. This is not a physics lesson or anything like that. But what it means is that that combination results in that the two notes blend together so well that we hear them as the same. That's very convenient because then we can divide our whole spectrum of notes up into octaves. That is, we start on one note, this is where we were singing, or to use all the notes on the piano. And when we get to there, we're back to the same note, and we can start our pattern all over again. So all we have to do then is figure out what goes on within the octave. Now, if you were to look at a piano, and including all the white and black keys, you would find there are 12 notes all together before we reach the octave. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, and then we're back where we started. So we have that as a basic division. Now, I won't go into how we ended up with 12. That's a long historical accident, more or less. But nevertheless, that's what we have. Most pieces, however, don't regularly use all of those. One of the things you, in some way, probably absorbed in your life, either through singing in school or seeing the Sound of Music or something like that, was do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, do. Right? And notice, we start with do, do, re, mi, fa, sol, la, ti, and then we're back where we started, right? Do. And how many notes did we have? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. And the eighth takes us back where we started. And that's where the name octave comes from. Most music uses that we hear, the big exception is a lot of 20th century music, uses a basic pattern of eight notes, or seven notes within the octave. The eighth is a repetition, from which these other notes will be used as supplements. You know, they'll be used here and there and added in various different ways. It's this 8-7+1 pattern that defines most of our most of what we hear. It's certainly characteristic of, and not just of classical music. Virtually all popular music, most folk music, other kinds of music makes use of that particular pattern. Now, there's just a few things you need to understand about this pattern as a listener. We don't need to get into a lot of details. But one of the most fundamental things is this idea of tonality. What it boils down to is not all eight notes or seven notes in the octave are equal. Some are more important than others. And in just about every case, there will be one note that acts as the focal point or the center of gravity. And that note is called the tonic, T-O-N-I-C. And when we use the word tonality, we mean that one note is acting as the tonic or our center of gravity. If you go to a concert or you read about a piece of music and you're talking about a concerto in the key of D or in D major, what that means is that note is the note that's acting as the tonic or the focal point. I can illustrate this very well. I'm going to play a scale downward. And notice when you get to that last note at the bottom, you really want to hear that note. Now, I can take that same scale, I can put a little bit of rhythm to it, and it's going to become something very familiar to you. Now, what happens if I go on with that tune just a little bit? Excuse me just a second, I'm stuck. Okay. You really don't want to stop there, do you? Because the next note is the tonic, and you feel it pulling back to the tonic. Feels much better now, doesn't it? It's that sense of gravity or directionality that's behind much, much music. Now, there's a couple of factors here that make it that way. One has to do with certain combinations work to create that sense of pattern. First of all, I should define one other idea. You've probably, you know, as I was playing, I started just doing one note, and then I kind of began to do harmony and chords. There are certain patterns of sounds that we call chords, and that's when you play several notes together at once. And there's one particular type of chord that's by far the most common, and that goes a long way toward the use of certain chords go a long way towards creating your sense of tonality. Some patterns, when you put certain notes together, they create a very nice blend. The most common blend, and the one that I think we really favor in our listening, is when we take every other note, do, mi, and sol. That is every third note, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And that particular pattern is called a triad. A triad sounds like this. Now, I notice that sounds a lot more pleasant than something like that. And it's something you really can feel. In fact, I'd like to try something here. I'd like you to sing a triad for me. Okay? Yeah, I think you can do it. Look at it this way. I mean, this is your chance, live from the Kennedy Center in performance, right? And the point of this, however, is don't worry about so much, I'm singing my note, but I want you to listen to what other people are doing. And it's that sense of musical depth that you'll have when you do it. We'll do this, okay? We're gonna do that triad, and we'll build it. Okay, group one, this is your note. La, can you hold that? Now group two, la. And group three, la. Now I'm gonna stop playing, but keep singing and listen to the other people. Okay, hey, that was nice. That was nice. Can you, but did you hear how it just sort of fit into place? That's the basis of our harmony and the basic unit that goes a long way towards giving us tonality. Now, there's one other factor in here. When the notes blend together like this very well, we refer to those notes as being consonant. That other thing I played just a minute ago, which sounded like just a horrid jangle, we refer to that as being dissonant. I think those terms are sort of obvious in themselves as to why. But I want to stress something. Consonants or dissonance is not something bad in music. As a matter of fact, you'll find dissonance in all music. If you don't have any dissonance, it's going to be so bland, it's going to be totally boring. And what really makes music go, just like we have beat and meter, what makes harmony work and go, is this sense of moving from dissonance to consonance. Because when you do that, you move, dissonance creates tension, and then consonance creates a sense of relaxation or resolution of tension. We all, at least most all of us, want to resolve tension. So what I'd like to do is, again, have you sing. And this time we only have to divide up into two groups. Why don't we take the aisle right in the middle? And I'm going to have each group, it's going to get more complicated, however, because you're going to have to sing two notes, okay? And what we're going to do is start off with a note that's dissonant, and then we'll move to our two notes that are dissonant against each other, and then we'll move to two notes that are consonant. Here's what's going to happen. Okay, group one over here, this will be your part. Okay, la, and then you'll move down, la. Okay, want to try that again? La, la. Hey, that's great. That sounds good. Okay, group two, this is your part. You'll start with that note, then you'll move up. La, la. Okay, once again, la, la. Okay, that's good. Now, the hard part is going to be getting that dissonance at the beginning, because you're going to be kind of grating against them and vice versa. And so you're going to not, you know, it's going to, you have this tendency to want to tense up when you hear that dissonance. But what I'd like you to do, I'll get the dissonance started, and then when I wave my hand, move to the second note, and all of a sudden the room will become very harmonious. Okay? Okay, let's get the two notes going. La. Now hold that. La and la. Okay, now. Hey, all right. Could you feel it happening? Patterns of triads and dissonances that really make things, that really work more than any other to define tonality. You can start on any note, of course, and build a triad. Do, mi, sol, or you could start here, re, fa, la. But the first note of the scale where we start, which is the tonal center, is called the tonic. Now, if we count five notes up, do, re, starting on do, re, mi, fa, sol, that note is called the dominant. And you can build a triad. You would go sol, ti, and then you'd have to go up to re. And often you can add, often that particular note there, you start with that triad on the dominant and you add the dissonance I just mentioned. Now, those two chords, one built on the tonic and one built on the note five up, which is called the dominant, are by far the most common chords that you'll hear, and that's what defines tonality. If I do this, that sounds like a tonic. If I do this in reverse, you don't want to end there, do you? That doesn't sound like a tonic. And what I'm doing, if you listen to the bass here, I'm going dominant and then down five notes. And if I put chords on top, it sounds even stronger. That motion, 5-1 like that, is you hear over and over and over again. This is so strong, as a matter of fact, that I can do anything in my right hand and it'll still sound like dominant to tonic. Let's say I play this. Okay? Doesn't sound too great, does it? Now, I'm gonna do this at the same time I do that, and it's gonna sound dissonant, but it's still gonna sound like a tonic. Still sounds like you've ended in the tonic. So this is what goes on. You hear this. How often do you hear something like this at the end of a piece? All I'm doing is tonic, dominant, tonic, dominant. Now, you can't go anywhere from here. What if I were to do something like this? You don't want that to happen, do you? at least you certainly weren't expecting that. So there's this very, it's not just this matter of combining chords, but there's a very clear sense of directionality. Certain combinations set you up to expect certain things to happen. At the end there, what you wanted to hear was this. Right? And that brings me to the final thing I think we're gonna have to stop on this particular comment. And that is what listening to music is all about, is your own expectations. As you listen, patterns in music sets you up to expect certain things to happen. And as you develop a sense of this sort of thing, you begin to expect these things. And what makes a piece interesting is that a composer knows about those expectations and plays around with you. You know, if you completely satisfied all your expectations in the first 10 seconds of the piece, you might as well turn your CD off and or go home or whatever. But a good composer will often drag out these expectations, maybe just like I was doing with all of this, you know, sort of. You know, repeat it or whatever, or do something else, or. Keeps it going, and that's what listening to music is all about, and that's what music is all about. It's think of it almost, I don't want to say a game, I don't mean that, but think of it as some sort of interaction between you and the composer, and the interaction with you is what's going on in terms of your own expectations.